ready? Don't do that. You ready? Here we go. I want to talk about the medieval period. We spoke before about the end of the Bayit Sheni, the medieval period. So medieval period is after Bayit Sheni. We know that we have the Rabbanan Sevarai, we move into the Gaonim. Now, in the period of the Gaonim, 8th century Persia, we have the formation of the Karaites. So, how does this work? So, first of all, in Bavel, where is Bavel, what modern-day country? Iraq. Okay, Iraq, they gave the Jews autonomy. So we had two leaders. We had a religious leader, and we had a secular leader. What were their names? What? Well, the names of the leaders.
The Abbasin and the Nasr. No. Like Rav Shum.
The
like.
Gaonim. That's why the period is called the Gaonim. And they were like the Rosh Yeshiva. And what was the name of the secular leader of the Jews? The governor. We have it in the Gemara even. The Reish Galusa. The Reish Galusa. Okay? You have the religious leader, the Gaon. You have the second leader, the governor, the Reish Galusa. Now, the Reish Galusa was a descendant of David HaMelech. Rabbi Gamliel, I'm sorry, not Rabbi Gamliel. The Reish Galusa, I wrote Reish Gimel in my notes. I got messed up. Okay, the Reish Galusa would appoint the Gaon. Say when the Gaon died, he would appoint the next Gaon. And the Gaon would appoint the next Reish Galusa when he died. They were working together. It was really more formal because it was usually the oldest son of the person would take the job. But in the 8th century, when the Reish Galusa died, he had no sons, and he went to the nephews. And the oldest nephew was a guy named Anan. And the Gaon of that time felt that Anan was an apikoros. Felt he really wasn't appropriate. He was a heretic. And the Gaon named Anan's brother instead to be the Reish Galusa. Okay. Anan went to the Persian authorities. He had some backing of the people. And he applied for a new position. Now, if you were the Reish Galusa, you were given funds. You were given authority. Because there's some sort of autonomy. He now went to the Persian and said, I want to have funds. I want to have my own office. Because I am different than that religion. I represent a different religion. Okay? My religion is the Karaites. Okay? The Karaim. Okay? Unlike the rabbinic Jews who followed the Torah Shavuot, the Karaim only looked at the Torah Shavuot. Okay?
You know Reform Jews?
No. Reform Jews don't look at the Torah. That's really very harsh. But no, the Karaim were very frum in their reading of the Torah Shebechtav. So I'll give you an example. It says, what? Karaim, from the word kra is the pasuk. Right?
I heard Sukkim come from the word like
Sadak, because it was a group of people. They followed up Sadak, right? But here, Karaim is from the word kra, pasuk. Now, for example, what does a pasuk say? Lo tivaru esh b'chol moshevotechem. What does that mean?
Don't
have fire in your home. So what did they have? No cooking, no lights. Okay, the Mishnah Berurah writes, if you see someone on Shabbos who's not eating hot food, you should be choshesh, that maybe he's a Karaite. But we have warm food on Shabbat because we have fires going. So we have lights in our house. So okay, the Karaites sat in the dark on Shabbos.
So how do we understand Pesach?
You can't kindle light. You can't make a fire. But you can have a fire burning from before. Now, for example, today there are still Karaites.
They didn't have Shabbos candles?
No, they wouldn't allow it. Okay? Today, you have Karaites still. And I mentioned to you, there's a shul here in the old city. The Karaites today have lights in the house because they have LED lights. Because LED lights are not incandescent bulbs. It's not filament. It's not heat. And therefore, it's not a din in. I guess they have their own poskim. It's not a din in fire. And so they won't be able. They won't have to sit in the dark. Similarly, there's a pasuk in Shmos that says, "Al yetzei ish mimkomo biyom Shabbat." From there, we learn all about Tchum Shabbat, that you can't go out of the Tchum. They say you don't leave your house. Okay? You don't leave your house. Except for shul. You're allowed to go to shul. But otherwise, you don't leave your house. Okay? As opposed to rabbinic Jews who think Friday night is like mitzvah night, they don't have sex on Shabbos. Why? You get fatigued. It's a malacha. It says you're not allowed to do any malacha. So they assume malacha means anything that you would like get fatigued from. So, tired. So there's no sex on Shabbat. Okay, they didn't observe tefillin because they said tefillin was a metaphor. You should bind yourself to God. You don't need to actually put on boxes and stuff like that. That old box, I mean, that'll be a Torah Shalapa anyway. So they said there's a metaphor, bind yourself. I mean, it's not a ridiculous thing to say. We have Psukim and Navi that talk about circumcising your heart. No one thinks that you should do open heart surgery. So they're saying, when you put on the tefillin, you should bind yourself to a Kaddish Baruch Hu.
How did they do Shkita?
Okay, don't know.
Why?
They don't observe Basa V'Chalav because it's not explicitly written in the Torah. It says, Lo Tzvat Shal Gedi B'Chalev Imo. So they won't. They won't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Fine. But it doesn't mean that you can't have Basa V'Chalav. It doesn't say that anywhere in the Torah. And as we know, they don't observe Chanukah because Chanukah is not written in Tanakh. Purim is. Chanukah is not. So they don't observe.
Okay.
What?
Okay.
The carrots. But in the Karaite Shul, my friend went in there and asked, they said, of course they observe Yom Ha'atzmut and Yom HaShalayim, those miracles we saw with our own eyes. Obviously we observe it. Okay? A little ironic that there are many Jews that observe Hanukkah and don't observe Yom Ha'atzmut. Okay, fine. Now, Prasad Gaon.
Where's Purim
observed? In the Navi, it's in Tanakh. They have Tanakh. Okay?
So this is just Torah. Doesn't it end with
Moshe? Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. Okay? Prasad Gaon. Is probably the most famous of the Gaonim. He becomes a Gaon. He actually was imported. He wasn't from Babel, he was from Egypt. He was brought in. He's such a big Talmud Chacham, he's well known. And he wrote a book called Emunot V'Deot. Okay? Emunot V'Deot. He tried to reconcile Judaism with Aristotle and Plato. At this time, the most sophisticated people in the world were in the Arab countries. Okay? They were all into philosophy. So you had Jews that felt Judaism is not really rational. Judaism is like, you know, filled with like all sorts of old wives' tales. And if I want rationalism, I have to go look to secular philosophy. So Rav Saadi Gaon said, I want to come now and show that there is nothing irrational about Judaism. He can reconcile Judaism with Aristotle and Plato. He was aiming it at the assimilated Jews, trying to show them that Judaism has dogma. There are things that we have to believe in. Muslims had all sorts of books that dealt with what their belief system was. And he said it's important for Jews to know that. And since he also was aiming at the Karaites, 90% of his arguments are just based on Psukim. Because if you want to convince the Karaites of something, to quote a Gemara is not going to do it, because they don't think that's important. Similar to Rav Chaim Volozhin, when he wrote his Nefesh HaChaim and he wanted to convince the Hasidim of the importance of Torah, in the Nefesh HaChaim, he quotes Zohar's right and left because that's like their go-to book. So here as well, when he's trying to aim at the Karaites, the go-to book is Tanakh. So he's not quoting Gemara so much. Most of his proofs are from Tanakh.
And God say follow the rabbis?
Yeah, okay.
So, no argument.
Yeah, but like,
a Karaite.
You know, so, but you're right. But based on that, it's like the rabbis that I guess would be like Moshe. I don't know. Now, there's a machlokas today if Karaites should be viewed as Jews. Okay? And
not
if
reforms.
Yes, what?
Reforms are counted as Jews?
You're counted as Jews if your mother's Jewish. Okay? But the problem here was Karaites now didn't have the Torah Shebaal Peh. So even if you want to say they're Jewish, you'd have a problem. Maybe they're all mamzerim. Or they all be mamzerim?
Or they're marrying someone that's supposed to be.
They might have gotten married and didn't know how to do a proper get. Because the laws of getting are really explained to Torah Shebaal Peh. So if let's say a man got married, and getting married is much easier than getting divorced. So then, and then he divorced his wife but didn't give her a kosher get. When she remarries, quote unquote, she's actually having an affair. And once you have a mamzer in one generation, all the subsequent generations of that mamzer are mamzer. So,
Jewish.
So, yes, but I wouldn't be able to marry them. So, like, the question is, how do I view the Karaites? Big machlokas, but Rav Avadia has broad shoulders, and he basically paskened, Karaites are viewed as Jews, and you can marry Karaites. Okay? I guess I don't remember if I ever looked at the tshuva, maybe I did, but in my notes I didn't write it down now. Could be that he said that we probably hold that their marriages weren't good marriages.
Oh.
And if marriages aren't good marriages, it doesn't matter if they're gets or good gets. Right? So based on that, if you were to fall in love with a Karaite girl And then she, like, you know, says she'll be chozer b'tshuva. So then, fine. You don't have to worry about that. She's not Jewish. You don't have to worry. She's a mamzer. And like I said, there are still Karaites in Yerushalayim, in Israel.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. That was Karaites. Next thing I want to talk about is the ban on polygamy. What's polygamy?
Multiple wives.
Okay. When did that come about? 10th century. By who? Rabbeinu Gershom. Good. Rabbeinu Gershom of Germany. Known as the Ma'or HaGolah, the light of the exile.
Years, over now, no?
What? Maybe. So now, Rabbeinu Gershom of Germany bans polygamy and divorcing a woman against her will. According to the Torah, both those are mutter. And divorce a woman against her will, and you can take a second wife. The ban was to prevent a Chilul Hashem. Since Christians didn't do this, Jews would look less moral. So, wow, look at that lowlife. Got multiple wives, wow. So said, all right, Christians weren't doing it. He banned it. The truth is, even though it is permitted in the Torah, it's never encouraged. And you see all the cases in Tanakh where someone had multiple wives, it didn't really go so well. Right? We have Sarah with Hagar, and we have Rachel and Leah, we have in Shmuel, Pnina and Chana, the wives of Shlomo, you know. Kadosh Baruch Hu created Adam and Chava, not Adam and Chava and Debbie. So it would seem that Kadosh Baruch Hu said one man, one wife, that's it, no more. Okay.
Now,
you should be happy if you get one. In. I just ripped on you and you wanted a pound. Fine, now in.
Yeah.
In Muslim countries, this was the norm. Okay? If your neighbor had four wives, it was not considered really weird if you had also, you know, multiple wives. In Muslim countries, many of the people had multiple wives. Therefore, there never was a ban on Jews living in Muslim countries that not have multiple wives. The state of Israel allowed aliyah of people with multiple wives, but you could not get married in this country to more than one woman. So if you came from a country, let's say from Yemen, and you had multiple wives, then it was totally okay to come into Israel and be married to your multiple wives. But in Israel, they will not perform second marriages. You know, if you're already, or if you're still married, they won't perform, even if you're from Sephardic countries. It's against the law in Israel to have multiple wives. But as I said, you can, you know, through the back door, if you already had multiple wives, you're coming from Yemen. So you can come in with your multiple wives. Now there was a need for the second takana as well, because let's say I wanted to take a second wife and now I can't. So I go, okay, no problem. What would you do? You divorce your first wife against her will and then take that second wife. But you can't divorce your first wife against her will. That was also part of the, you know, the takana of Rabbeinu Gershom. And
smart.
And today we also have the ksuba to act as a deterrent. They shouldn't just, you know, get rid of the wives. That's William Sechusubis. Okay, fine. But this is all the ban. Now, what Baruch said is, it is possible that the ban was only for 1,000 years and it ran out. There was even talk that in the beginning of the State of Israel, they should maybe do away with it, because after the War of Independence, so many men lost their lives. And there was way more women, marriageable age women, than men. So people said, maybe let men take multiple wives so the women do not go through life without being married. In the end, it was voted down, but at least was, you know, it was a discussion.
Do women really want to be married to men?
I don't know. That was at least a discussion. Could be a woman who'll say, no, I don't want to be the second fiddle. Okay, but for those women who'd rather be taken care of by a man, even if it means sharing a man and being on her own, so at least would be an option. I don't know. Next of this medieval period, the Crusades. Okay, how long is the Crusades?
Depends.
100 years. Okay.
There were a couple.
Okay, so Crusades last, there was 8 in total, and it lasts around 200 years. The first was in 1095. What was the purpose of the Crusades?
Conquer Israel.
Holy pilgrimage.
Conquer the holy cities, conquer Palestine, the holy cities of Jerusalem, take it away from Muslim rule, okay? And on the way,
butchering Jews.
Yeah, on the way, they offered Jews a chance to either convert or die.
Nice.
So in 1096, they took the 800 Jews of Worms. Worms is where Rashi would later on go on to live. And they refuse to be converted, and they're all murdered. In the first 3 months of this first crusade, 12,000 Jews were killed. Okay? You know, we just had October 7th, where 1,200 Jews were killed. This was 10 times that. 12,000 Jews were killed. In 1099, Jerusalem was captured. All Jews were rounded up into a large shul and burnt alive. Okay? So again, some of the terrible things that we just now witnessed this year on October 7th is not...
even close.
It's not new, unfortunately, to Jewish history. The tefillah that Ashkenazim say when we begin Musaf, we say Av HaRachamim, that tefillah is about these crusades. If you pay attention, say Kilot HaKodesh Shemasru Nafsham Al Kiddush Hashem, the holy communities that gave their lives to die Al Kiddush Hashem rather than be converted. Okay? Instead of being converted, these people were killed. This was just the beginning of Europe's anti-Semitism. In 1290, we have the first blood libel, and it comes in London. And it's followed by expulsions. We have expulsions, not just from England, but from France and Hungary and Austria and Germany and Lithuania and Spain and Portugal and Bohemia. They all had expulsions. And between the 15th and 18th century, Russia never allowed a Jew to ever even step foot in the country. Okay? And then later on, between 1948 and 1967, all the Arab countries expelled the Jews that were living in their countries, and that's how so many of the guys here in this yeshiva are here, otherwise their families would still be living in these Arab countries. Okay. In Spain, there were many forced conversions, and the king and queen, Ferdinand and Isabella, felt that these conversos, these converts, were insincere. And they were secretly keeping Judaism. And with the Pope's permission, they began the Spanish Inquisition to weed out these, they don't call them conversos, now they call them Marranos. Marranos means pigs, right? So this is a very derogatory term, okay? They wanted to weed out these pigs, these Marranos, and there was lots of torture involved. Eventually, they decided, because of the urging of Torquemada, who was a priest, who was like their personal priest, that all Jews should be exiled to make Spanish Judenrein, they didn't use that word, but to make Spanish 100% Christian, get rid of the Jews. Now the king and queen, Ferdinand and Isabella, they had advisors. They had senior officers. One of them, very good, Abarbanel, and the other one, a man named Avraham Senior. They were both rabbis, both from Jews, and they tried to convince them to convert, but to no avail. In the end, though, Avram Senior decides to convert. He's 80 years old, and he and his family convert. He felt he was too old to move and start all over, penniless. And unfortunately, he became a role model for many others. They said, well, if a rabbi can do it, then I guess it's not so bad. So all these other Jews who didn't want to give up their possessions decided to stay, followed suit. 200,000 Jews in Spain were baptized. Between 50 and 100,000 left by foot, meaning the over majority decided to convert. They left by foot or ship to start all over. There's a kina in the Sephardi keynote about the expulsion from Spain. Okay, the Abarbanel led these people to Sefer Torah in hand, and much of the writing. Okay, you guys with me? We learned Shmuel and Malachim. We quoted the Abarbanel a lot. Okay, much of his anti-king viewpoint is based on his own personal experience with the kings, Spain and Portugal, and definitely colors his view of royalty. You know, when I first read this number, 200,000 and only 50 to 100,000 stayed, I said, that's crazy. You know, we're always thought to believe that only in our generation are things terrible. But, you know, back then, everyone's from and everyone, you know, was good. And then I thought, like, wait, you mean about maybe one-third actually didn't convert and they decided to leave? And I said, if it's happened in the United States, they said, you'll be kicked out of the country or convert. Do we really think we'd have one-third of the Jews that would say, okay, I'll be kicked out, I don't want to convert? No. Probably have 90% of the Jews that were saying, sign me up, where do I convert? You know, maybe 10% would leave. Okay, they had a third that said, I'll voluntarily leave rather than be convert. So as disappointing as it is, I think today it would be much worse. So, all right, that's that. We'll stop for today. What?